Today's gospel is taken from Matthew chapter 10, verses 24 through 39. A disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher and the slave like the master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will also deny before my Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. The word of the Lord.
When I was a kid, my parents did the right thing and taught me that police officers are to be respected and obeyed. They represent the law, and they are the good guys, and therefore, do whatever they tell you. That's a good thing. And because I was a pretty good kid, I didn't get any trouble. I didn't know any police officers firsthand. I remember one day when I was a kid, driving down the street, and my father was going a little fast, and all of a sudden, he heard the siren go, and, you know, pull over, and I was sitting there in the back seat, just shocked. What's going to happen now? My father had broken the law, and here was the police officer, and what was he going to do but throw my father into jail? And what was I going to do without a father? Well, the police officer came. My dad rolled down the window. The police officer had a big smile on his face. He said, "Sir, I'm not going to write you up for a ticket. Just wanted you to know you're going a little fast, and it is a residential area here. There might be kids, so just watch it." And my dad thanked him, and we went on our way. All of a sudden, my view of that police officer was just changed dramatically, right? Before, all I saw him was the stern hand of the law that could drag you off to jail. And then the second place when he actually expressed his concern, here was a person who was genuinely concerned about the safety of the people on his watch in his neighborhood. And it just expanded my vision of what a police officer was about, huh? This illustrates to me something that I read, an interesting piece of commentary this week. It talks about authority, and we struggle with that a lot. We see our political stage struggling over authority. Jesus himself struggled over authority and with the authority of his day. And this op-ed piece that I read talked that there are two types of authority. One is formal authority, one is moral authority. Formal authority people get simply because of the position that they occupy. That's how I first saw the police officer, right? He occupied, he had the badge on. That was his position. I didn't know anything about him as a person or what he thought. He was just purely formal authority to me. It's authority that is bequeathed on somebody because they've earned it or because they've been elected to it. But that type of authority is also dangerous because evil people can grab that authority. They can manipulate it. They can even win it over and gain control of that. Moral authority, on the other hand, is based on our actions and our values, specifically how our actions and values go together. And as such, moral authority can only be earned. Now, this piece said that there are three characteristics of people who exercise moral authority. First of all, it says they are not afraid of the truth. And they can trust people with the truth, whether it's good, whether it's a harsh truth, it doesn't matter. And that makes them unique because there is going to be no lying, no manipulation going on. They don't have to try and hedge the truth a little bit. They believe that people can handle the truth and that the truth will set them free and lead us on the right course. The second thing about people who exercise moral authority is that they base their actions on deeply held positive values. Values like fairness, values like honesty and decency. And they place, they act on the basis of that and not on the basis of their own little feelings, their own little desires, their own little fears and wants and needs, whatever it is. They put themselves as best they can out of the way and act on these values. And because they act out of that, we can trust that they will be able to do the right thing, even though it is hard, even though it is not to their personal gain. That's not what's important. What's important is keeping these values. And the third thing about people who act out of moral authority, who exercise moral authority, is that they have the ability to draw deep loyalty from people. Loyal because they invite them to follow a cause that is big enough for them to devote themselves to, totally and absolutely. So these two types of authority, formal, moral authority. How are these two related? Well, they can each be exercised separately, or they can be exercised together. And that gives us three combinations, right? Three possibilities. Two of them are good and one of them are bad. Formal authority, if it's going to be a positive thing, always needs to be combined with moral authority. They need to work together. Like I said, when I saw thought of police officers just at the beginning, I saw them only as a formal authority, and therefore I was afraid of them. I thought they were something to be, you stayed away from them. But when I saw that he also had moral authority, that he had deep values about the safety of his community, then he became a real positive force in my life and in his community. All of you exercise this combination of formal and moral authority. Parents are doing it all the time, right? Parents, because you are older and stronger and wiser and have the money and everything else, you have formal authority. That's your office. That's your position over your children. You're not their equals. And yet, every parent realizes that you can only go so far as on your formal authority, right? There's only so many times when you can say to your kid, when he says, "Why should I do that?" You say, "Because I'm the mommy and I told you so." That only goes so far. At a certain age, your children need to see you exercising moral authority, right? Definitely by the time they are teenagers, they must see that you do the things you do because they are the right things. Because you value these things, because you know that they are going to lead to a better life for you and for your children. And only when your children have appropriated that moral authority in their life can you trust them to act and do the right thing on their own when you're not standing over them scolding, right? The same type of wonderful combination of formal authority and moral authority comes often with the best coaches that you've known, right? A coach could try and coach simply their team simply by formal authority. I'm the coach, you know, if you don't do what I want, I can make you run laps all day until you collapse, right? But the best type of coach, the coach that has an impact in your life, adds the moral authority to that. They value you. They see you as a person. They know that winning is not the most important thing, but that your growth as a team member, as a sports person, is what is really most important in life. And when they see that in you and teach you to the value that, those are the types of coaches that you will give your ultimate loyalty to, right? Of course, if we formal authority doesn't have moral authority to it, it simply becomes bullying or tyranny, doesn't it? When people just want to operate on formal authority, we get a Hitler, right? He had no morals, he had no values, he didn't care about other people, he only cared about himself, but he was able to grab that power, and it was death and tyranny and terror. On the other hand, we can exercise moral authority on its own, and that is the deepest and strongest and most powerful. And all of you exercise moral authority on your own, too. If you're married, at your best, you're exercising moral authority. Why? Because neither of you should be over the other one. Both of you come there as equals. Both of you are bound together by not only your love, but by, this is important to us. This is the life we want to create for each other. This is the type of family that we want to have. Friendship is based purely on moral authority, right? Again, when it's best, we come together as equals, and it is only our shared vision, only our shared values that bind us together. The greatest changes in history, I think you could arguably say, were brought about only by people who exercised moral authority and did not have formal authority. Mother Teresa, she wasn't the Pope of the Catholic Church, was she? She didn't have this formal thing of authority. She just had, she was just a little nun, but she went to the slums of India, and when she embraced the poorest of the poor and treated them with dignity and respect and with love, she had moral authority that changed the planet, right? Martin Luther, the founder of our church, at the beginning of the Reformation at least, he did not have formal authority. He was just this little monk off in the backwoods of Germany, and as he read the scriptures and learned about how God actually worked, he dared to stand up against the whole formal authority of the Roman Church. Jesus Christ himself had no formal authority. The Romans took him. They were the ones who had the power. The Jewish leaders had the power. They tried him falsely, and they killed him. And yet Jesus' moral authority and his love shone through so much that he transformed the world. You know, formal authority often is deeply, deeply challenged by moral authority. And that's what Jesus was talking about in the gospel lesson for today. He was encouraging and pointing out to his disciples that they needed to exercise this moral authority to have faith in it. But he says it's not going to be easy, and you and I are going to meet opposition to it all the way. And that's what Jesus was talking about in that lesson today. The corrupt authorities were already plotting to end his life, right? And so Jesus had to call his disciples to moral leadership. Let's look at those three characteristics again. First of all, one who has moral authority trusts people with the truth. So listen to what Jesus says to his disciples. Have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim in the housetops. Jesus knew people could handle the truth. The second thing is moral authority is motivated by values. Well, listen to Jesus talk about this. Do not think that I have come to bring peace on the earth. We kind of get confused about this. Isn't Jesus the Prince of Peace? Indeed he was. But he didn't want to have this nice kind of peace where everyone just agreed not to discuss anything because it might cause people to be upset. No, he says, I'm not coming to that. He says, there are deeper values. So I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of their own household. There are other things more important even than family to stand up for. And the third thing that moral authority exercises is that it calls people to a noble cause greater to themselves. And here, finally, Jesus says, "Whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." Jesus is calling us to this deeper, more important life that is worth even dying for. So often in our naivete, we think, well, formal authority is what I really want. That's what I really think. You know, everyone who comes out of a pastor can't, as a pastor, a new pastor, can't wait to have their first church because we think, because we're the pastor, we can make things happen in a church. We can make decisions and we can tell people what to do based on our wonderful training and our wonderful theology. And guess what? Every pastor very quickly hits a brick wall when they just try and exercise formal authority. They realize there's a whole group of people here. There's a whole body of Christ living its life, and they have values, and they have a bigger sense of purpose other than just me. We have to learn to trust power to people. We have to learn that losing the formal authority, even though it seems like losing our life, is actually gaining it. One of my favorite teachers says, we should only trust power to people who can give it away, who don't need it in their life. So how would we begin to exercise that in our own life? It's a challenge. It's not the easiest thing. But maybe let me give you a little exercise. It's something I try and do. The next time you're in a conversation with somebody, whoever, about anything whatsoever, and all of a sudden you start feeling yourself tensing up, getting a little bit wanting to argue, getting a little bit, I need to be right, step back. Take a step back, just if you can, just in your mind, and ask yourself those three questions. Am I able to face the truth in this, or am I just insisting on my version of the facts? Am I able to look at the other person's truth and hear that too? Secondly, am I motivated by values here, or am I just needing to be right? Or is there something bigger here that we need to be looking at, not just my little needs and wants and insecurities? And finally, are we able, out of this conversation, to come to a point where we both can agree on something that's broader and deeper and more important than either of us? And if we can step back and answer those questions openly and honestly, maybe we can re-engage back into there, back into the world, not just with the force of formal authority, but with the persuasive power of loving, caring, gentle, moral authority, and actually make this world a different place. Amen.